This is Visitations.
With Elijah Wood.
And Daniel Noah.
And now, part two of our visit with Guillermo del Toro.
You have time to show us around a little
bit? Yeah, sure. Yeah? No problem.
Great. Do you mind if we keep recording while we...
No, that's fine. Good.
I might use the restroom real quick.
Yeah, I don't need to do that.
No, I don't know. You have to use the one near the kitchen.
Oh, okay.
This is full of tequila.
Okay.
This is the original mechanical doll from Night Gallery, from the episode of the doll. This is James Whale's paintbrush.
Oh my God!
From
what?
His art, from his kid as an, when
wow.
he died. This whole corridor is animation books and pre-production books.
Mm-hmm. Oh wow!
So all of this is animation.
Wow!
That's Cronenberg.
Oh, it is.
I got a Cronenberg book. Yeah. And this is the film book section. Those are auteurs, those are general. That's screenwriting on the left.
Oh, wow.
These are jokes and dialogue and acting on the left. Production design. You know, and the books you see here, about 3,000 books I duplicated to take to New Zealand.
Wow.
So I was moving 2 years. So I said, I don't want to travel in the originals.
Yeah.
So I bought 3,000 extra books to travel to New Zealand.
That's amazing. What?
Like, I don't have a maid that cleans nothing.
Wow, you clean it all yourself?
I do it with the help of two guys that come in on the weekends, and then the rest of the time, I'm alone.
Uh-huh.
Like, they come every 3-4 weekends,
and
we do all the floors and blah, blah, blah. But in the meantime, one of the things I like the most in this life is vacuum cleaning. I don't know why.
I like vacuum cleaning.
I love
as well.
I hate doing the bed.
Making the bed?
I cannot make the bed. I hate making the bed.
Yeah.
It's impossible. I love doing dishes.
Mm-hmm.
I love vacuum cleaning. I love going to the supermarket.
I do too. Do you clean your own the home where you live yourself
everything.
As well? You clean
everything. Yeah.
Wow. So you get
every.
Do you clean
every,
your
every,
toilet? Do you scrub
everything.
Your own toilet?
Oh, everything.
Wow.
I do everything. I pride myself in not having any living help or nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Because I like doing it. I like going to the supermarket.
Yeah.
I like pulling out the Pavilion's card.
Yeah.
I love saying, here's, you saved $3.50.
Yeah, yeah.
I like it.
I like scanning my phone with the Whole Foods Amazon Prime membership.
Yeah, dude, I love it too.
I mean, I think you have to do it.
Yeah. I think as soon as you abandon those everyday activities,
yeah, it's very bad.
Then you remove yourself from what it means to be human.
Yeah.
And the people that get further and further away from that literally forget how to live and need people to help them live.
When you talk about your parents, you know, whatever went wrong with your childhood may have been on them, but after that, it's on you.
Mm.
I mean, you cannot spend your adult life saying, well, this happened to me when I was a child.
No.
You have to take charge.
Yeah.
It's your problem now,
to
put it in a very blunt way. You know?
Yeah.
One of the things I've been thinking about with you is sort of the theme of parenting and how you didn't have it consistently, and you've become a kind of super parent. In a way,
well, well, that's all of my movies. I think all of them, in one way or another, deal with it.
Mm.
I agree.
Know?
Yeah,
I think Crimson Peak deals with it. Hellboy certainly deals with it. Devil's Backbone deals with it. All of them.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the one exception is Shape of Water, which I think the first time I was more concerned with female. Fish man relationships.
Right.
Another timeless theme.
To me, it was is this idea that is really great when you love someone that has to have a monstrous side, necessarily small, large, whatever. It's better to love them without asking for a transformation.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
which is true of parents and kids.
So was there a point in your life, just not as a filmmaker, but just as a man, when you maybe became aware of that parenting theme and
of the movies? Or just as an idea?
Just in your life, just that you, again, you know, we talked a lot about how caring you are of young filmmakers and
right.
the paternal role that you take on. And so I'm,
that generosity.
Yeah. And
there is the thought that there are several defense mechanisms in the human mind, and the most elaborate, the most advanced of all of them is basically the one that says, to put it simply, this happened to me, I won't let it happen to others.
Right.
Mm. You know, like when I went through Mimic, when I worked with Andre Overdahl or Andy Muschietti or Bayona, whoever it is, I go, no one can mess with them, you know? I'm going to protect them. Mm-hmm. And with your kids, you know, you have you do the best you can. Now you have to understand that you have blinders. So, you know, your kids give you your review. As a parent, the Rotten Tomatoes review of your kids comes when they turn 17, and it's merciless. And then you gotta relearn to be a parent when they are teenagers, because you go, you're right. Mm-hmm. I didn't see that. I didn't see this. That was a blind spot. I thought I was doing well. Mm-hmm. You know, you can overprotect, underprotect, overwatch, underwatch. Mm-hmm. And the only thing that you need to understand is you're never through with learning as a person, right? Never.
And growing, yeah.
And growing.
Did you ever give your parents their Rotten Tomatoes review?
Yeah, I gave my mother, I gave her Rotten Tomatoes review when I was very young, and because we had more of that space to talk like that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
With my father, I mean, it was a different figure, and I gave him that review way later.
When?
In his life, probably, I don't know, 6 years ago.
How did he take it?
You know, it was not a time, I mean, when somebody's over 50, you're not going to learn something new.
I know.
Very hard.
Yeah.
I mean, they cease to learn. If you're not willing to learn, you cease to learn. Yeah. If you understand that you're learning, you learn things new. So I don't think I was doing it for that. I was doing it because I needed him to talk to me about sort of certain aspects of his life and biography before he passed. Mm-hmm. I said, look, we never talk about this. Mm-hmm. Please tell me what you think, man to man, you know? And I think that helps you when your parent gets older. If you're not careful, you can either sanctify them or the opposite. Mm-hmm. And if you have the chance to have a chat, you did realize they are neither saints nor the opposite.
They're human.
They have their yin, they have their yang.
Yeah.
And if you, then you have a complete portrait of the person, and you understand shortcomings and really great.
But how receptive was he to that conversation?
Oh, it didn't matter. It didn't matter. He did share.
I absolutely. Yeah.
I told him, look, I need you to share this.
For yourself, not to change him.
And he did, and of course, he was still the same person he was always. That's fine.
Yeah. You know, you say that when there's a crisis outside of offset, it's very hard for you to leave. How have you managed that with your role as a father?
It's very difficult. It has been very difficult, and we traveled all over the world. And I think that if I had the gift of a time machine, my decisions would be different.
Yeah.
You know, you can wonder about all these things, but like, look, you can, when you say we're moving 2 years to New Zealand. Mm-hmm. Like you make the decision unilaterally.
Yeah.
You know, as a filmmaker, but you shouldn't have. You should have said, hey, what? And I remember that first phone call. I said to Peter, I'm doing it. And he said, look, I'm going to give you a week to consult with your family, he said. And I said, no, it's a yes. In retrospect, he was right.
Wow.
I should have said, hey, what about these guys? it means losing this school and losing continuity. I would say we're going to shoot Hellboy 2 in Budapest. I would go with the exchange rate. You know, and that's not... But then again, I think as a father, you should... That's the one profession where you should go through a course and get a license.
Yeah.
I mean, you get a license to drive a car.
Yeah.
But you don't get a license to have a human being go into your life.
Yeah. Right.
And I find it staggering socially.
Yeah.
You should really say, look, you know, you're going to... And you're going to have to go through this much time of training.
Yeah.
Because the reality is that if we raised one generation right, the world would change. One. A single, not completely 100%. But if you had one generation of good parenting, complete good parenting, not helicoptering, not overprotective, not... Don't overdo it, don't underdo it, just do it...
Solid.
The solid way. But that demands one generation of adults.
Yeah.
Which most of us are not in many ways.
So your mother is now... Where is she living?
She's in Mexico.
Yeah.
She's been in bed for a while.
Okay.
But, you know, this is, when you ask about the theme, one of the things that is really, really, you asked me about the Oscar, and what really changed for me is there was a huge release in the sense that I thought, okay, now I can really, really create things for others. You know what I'm saying? And because and because immediately, I think that the when people say what there's not such thing as happiness, and I think there is and it's very simple, is think of the others.
Yeah.
And immediately you release everything that is unhappy about yourself. Yeah. And after the Oscars, the first thing I thought is, okay, let's use this tool to create permanent or as permanent as we can create things for the people coming behind you. So you are creating a little better chance of them doing a movie or expressing themselves.
Yeah.
And that took the form of two scholarships, a stop-motion animation center, and other little things that we're doing, you know? And even traveling with the Museum Expo, which is done for free. And everywhere we go, I mean, especially in Mexico, I said, I want Mondays free. To everyone, and we're announce a free final week for the audience. It's that time, right? And that makes it really, really good. You can reach what you're educated to understand as success. If you come to success with purely narcissistic thoughts, it'll never be enough, and you'll find yourself sadder than before success. You are almost like, well, I got this and nothing changed. But if you approach it in a rational way and you say, okay, enough about me after this, enough about me, what can we do? It's great. It is really fulfilling and it quenches a lot of sort of nagging in your brain, you know?
Yeah. One of the themes that's come up on the show a lot and just in our conversations with our friends is something that you've talked a lot about, and it's a lot of us came from childhoods that had a deep sense of impermanence. You know, parental figures kind of coming in and out, left to our own devices a lot, and how then when we become the parents... that terrible kind of Hobson's choice that we're constantly faced with between do I give what I have to my family or do I give it to the world? And you know, I know you talked about how you did your best to maintain that balance by bringing your family with you rather than...
But then you
didn't go to Mexico City. You brought them with you to Mexico City, so to speak.
But then you screw up in different
ways.
The fact is, when you are given a defective structure, unless you work at it, you're gonna repeat it.
Right.
You know, almost exactly. like in a different variation. Mm-hmm. Like it's almost like the note in a piano. Mm-hmm. You're gonna repeat the same note in the piano with a different pedal. Mm-hmm. You're gonna soften the note or make an octave higher, but you gotta repeat exactly what happened to you. Because that's the way you understand love.
Yeah, right.
Like if you understand love as my parents are traveling, you're gonna travel. Whether you know.
Right.
I mean, I'm being incredibly simplistic.
Sure. Sure.
But you do a variation thereof. Mm-hmm. You know, for example, I know my father grew up in complete abject poverty. You know, when he was a child, he was one of the youngest, if not the youngest, and he brought food to the table for everyone in his family. And they were many, many brothers. Mm. My uncle, to give you an example, had more than 20 kids. They were big families.
Wow.
Because it was the inheritance of the agrarian society in Mexico. Mm. The more kids you had, the more workers in the field. So everybody had big families.
Right.
And my father said, I did my best so that you guys would never have any basic needs, that you would have all your basic needs covered. That mm-hmm. was what I wanted. And you understand it. And he didn't repeat that mistake, but repeated it in another way. So the thing is, parenting is the way we exist is an ever-evolving thing. And look, I'm a divorced man, so obviously I didn't get it right, mm-hmm. you know, somehow. You know,
get the parenting part, right?
The family, right. Keeping a family together.
How long were you married?
35. 30 together. 35 together, 30 married.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's amazing.
But obviously you try and put your effort and mm-hmm. learn and, you know, try to correct. Mm-hmm. But it's the professions we choose are incredibly... they wouldn't exist in a balanced way in the beginning. It's impossible. Mm-hmm. When you're a young filmmaker, essentially you have to either choose another profession or put everything on that altar.
Yeah.
Because otherwise it doesn't happen.
One of the things I'm curious about is that you mentioned that the theme of Shape of Water you feel was different
yes.
from your previous films, and that it was about relationships and how we can't ask someone to transform for us. Yeah. And I'm struck by the fact that you were making that film probably at a time when you were confronting the dissolution of your own marriage. And I'm curious how much Shape of Water was in some way dealing with
Well, Shape of Water was... done. I wanted to make a song, like a love song. Like literally, I wanted it to feel like a song that you listen in the car mm-hmm. with the top down mm-hmm. on the PCH mm-hmm.
yeah.
on the way to the beach. You know, like a really beautiful melody.
Yeah,
you know. And I thought, I want to try to say what I think love is, mm-hmm. which is very, very simple. Is to see the other in its completeness, to really see you for who you are. Mm-hmm. Because if you marry someone that that necessarily has flaws, or, you know, flaws to me is a very bad word, characteristics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
And you see them as flaws, then that's not love. Mm-hmm. That's impossible to mm-hmm. remedy. Mm-hmm. You cannot ever remedy that. But if you find someone that looks at you and you look at them exactly as they are and you love them and you're not trying to hide or mitigate their personality, mm-hmm. then that's beautiful. Mm-hmm. You know, when we talk about transformation, I think people change each other. When you marry someone or you are with someone, that person changes you and you change that person.
Ideally.
Inevitably, if there's love, it'll happen.
Sure.
But that's different than demanding transformation.
Right? Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. That's why the ending of Beauty and the Beast in every version is always disappointing to me. Hmm. Because I really think the Beast should stay the Beast.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, wow.
Because that's how they fell in love. I mean, and to me, the idea of normalcy is so scary. Mm. It doesn't mean that the breaking the norm is the only good way. Mm-hmm. It's that breaking the norm should be as acceptable as mm-hmm. the norm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the plurality of human existence. Mm-hmm. is you can go back and forth, make a mistake, change your mind, you know, and that you cannot exist in a black and white way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Shape of Water tried to do that.
Yeah.
It was before anything to say that if I believe in God, I believe God resides only in two things. The will, meaning the conscience, the will of doing something, and in love. That's the only places. And I think in between two people in love, God is there. Not the Christian God, not the Catholic God. Divinity.
Divine, yeah.
The divine. And the that's why it was important for me that the creature was not just a monster or this and that. It's not a kinky movie about loving a monster. It's not that. It's the divinity of the creature.
Who are you? Do you feel you have a proxy in that film?
What do you mean?
Is there a character that you feel is you in Shape of Water?
They're all you. They're all.
Even the bad guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I never write the bad guy if I don't understand him.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah, I have. It has to exist as a like somebody I know.
Yeah.
Or an aspect of myself.
Yeah. Mm.
It has to be real for me. Yeah. It has to exist as a person I fear.
Yeah.
You know?
Do you view, I mean, the trajectory of your life seems like in some ways it's like before and after Shape of Water. And not just because you won the Oscar, but because your whole life changed. I mean, your father passed away immediately after. Mm. You came to the end of a very important relationship. Well, your children are grown.
Yeah, well, and what I think is we all live when the reason the myth of the vampire exists is because we are all basically we are all in different lifetimes. Like when you were a kid, that's a complete life on itself, and it ends. Mm-hmm. When you're a teenager and you have a whole life as
it's
a teenager,
so true,
and it ends.
Yeah,
and then as an adult, there's a part of the adult. Young adult that ends, and then you come into a mature human being in whatever way you want, and that too ends. Mm-hmm. And in a way, the best thing you can do in the last stage of your life is to prepare for the fact that it's going to be over soon, mm-hmm. and you realize the deepest realization you can have is that you are a link. And you came from another link, meaning I had teachers, many, many, many teachers I had, you know? And you're going to become that for somebody else. Mm-hmm. So you have to take that role mm-hmm. very seriously. Mm-hmm. And then the only thing you leave behind is a chain for more people to continue.
To follow that same
pattern. That. Yeah, and that's the only way to human existence. Mm-hmm. You're not going to solve anything. Mm-hmm. The way Soderbergh, I think, said it beautifully, he said, if the entire canon of Shakespeare has not changed humanity one iota, what can my movies do? Mm-hmm. Right? Which is absolutely, it's absolutely true.
Yeah. Wow.
You know, the best you can do with your life is for it to exist on the queue on Netflix. Your life's work is going to be on the queue of Netflix, you know?
And inspire other people.
And inspire other people, inspire of course, too. People. That's what songs are. Yeah. That's why music is eternal.
Yeah.
This is the comic book room. I mean, there's all the closets are full of comic books. So if you open any closet in the house, they're comic books. But this is sort of the comic books that I consult the most.
Have you met Alan?
No, never.
Me neither.
Guy?
I would love to meet him. He just seems like a bit of a hermit.
You know, I never want to meet the people I like.
Yeah, I understand that.
I wanted to meet Hitchcock. I wanted to meet Buñuel.
Yeah.
That's about it.
I've had a couple of devastating experiences.
I met Bradbury, and he was great. Work,
yeah.
You met Bradbury.
Wow.
He was great, yeah. Very sweet. Ray Harryhausen, great.
I heard, yeah.
Great guy. I met Holland Edison, a little thorny.
Yeah, thorny.
But brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I really think that you meet people through their work. When I was a kid, I used to think, I'm going to be like the Noah's Ark of the culture I love. I'm going to keep one of each.
Mm. But this is funny because you just steered directly into what I wanted to ask you about next, and it's this house. Mm-hmm. And the unbelievable, the rigor with which you collect and protect these objects seems in many ways a ferocious battle against impermanence.
It was for a long time, and then it isn't. I mean, what is happening with this house is, I think, my desire and what we're hoping to achieve is to leave this house somewhat as it is, with a few changes, and make it a writer-in-residence, artist-in-residence program.
Oh, my God.
Where people, after I pass, people can actually come to the house. Mm-hmm. The books will be cataloged. The movies will be cataloged. Where you can live in the house for 6 months and produce a screenplay or a painting or a work of art. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you're in a scholarship for 6 months.
Yeah. Oh, that's incredible.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's... My kids have identified the pieces of art they like, and those are gonna go out of the collection.
They'll take those.
Yeah.
That's good.
The rest, nothing is particularly important in contrast, but is very particularly beautiful in context.
When the fires were happening, I remember. I think we were in touch during that, or you guys were in touch.
They came 100 meters. From
yeah, there. I think we emailed, so I had a sense of what was happening. 100 within 100 meters.
Yeah. They were really, really close.
So, I mean, what was that like to contemplate losing this collection?
You know, that part is not that hard.
Really?
No. Losing it is not... I came the day after the fires started. I came through the canyons on Waze. It told me what to... And it took us many, many hours. But I came to the house and I grabbed the diaries, my diaries, a couple of photos of my childhood, a first edition of Faulkner's As I Lay Dying, and a few of the trophies, the Oscar, the Golden Lion, and a couple more. And I said, that's it. The rest, I have no... I'm not going to come in with a moving truck.
Yeah.
You know?
Wow. So you were prepared to let it all go that easily?
Back in the days of Pan's Labyrinth, the fire also came very close to the collection. And I got asked, what do you want us to take? And I said, nothing. Because whatever you take will remind me that I should have taken something else.
Yes, of course.
Yeah.
Yep.
I said, leave it all there. Because if everything goes, everything goes. Mm-hmm. But if you saved one, I should have saved this other one.
Yeah. And
other.
Then on and on and on it goes.
I have a very, very sort of near-death experience not a long time ago. I passed out for lack of, how do you call them, electrolytes. And it was a very, very... I went to the hospital, blah, blah, blah. But that started it. And
you were afraid for your life?
I felt like I was going to die. I don't know. Because your heart accelerates.
Yeah.
You're basically dehydrated. I had a moment of huge anguish because I thought, oh, my God, it's coming, and I haven't done this, that, and the other. And you get really, 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 really anxious. And then very clearly I saw the brackets, 1964-2000X. And then those brackets visually went, they zoomed out, and I saw like a sky full of stars. And I had this feeling, I just went,
Wow.
It's okay. And I thought, it doesn't matter. And I felt the most absolute peace.
Oh my God.
Ever felt.
That's incredible. Ever felt.
Completely, I was like, it's okay to go. You know?
Wow.
I can go. There's a saying that I find very moving that says, a boy that was loved by his mother can accomplish anything, they say, you know? That was raised and loved by his mother can accomplish anything. That may be simplistic, that may be too gender specific, you can switch it, you can make it father and mother or father and father, and or you can make it whatever you want, but that was parented with love.
Yeah.
Is the way I would translate
sure.
it. A daughter or a son or any human being that is parented correctly can face the world. Mm-hmm. And when you're not, you the way I define it is, you spend 40 years trying to solve your first seven.
Right.
You know, you spend 40 years trying to solve those 7 years where you were cracked.
Mm-hmm. Did you do it?
At your foundation. Well, you try. Yeah. I'm not saying that I'm. Yeah. I think you die without solving that puzzle.
Right.
But I think that the essence of life is that you have to understand that the toy comes incomplete. It doesn't come with all the pieces that it says in the box. There's always pieces missing. And that's the nature of the toy. So that's the only, you have to make peace with that. Because and then you don't look for completion, you look for flow. You say, this is what is here, this is what I can do with what is here. And you think collectively. If you're the head of a family, you don't think about you, or you don't make. Sometimes you make impulsive decisions. I have a very peculiar theory, which is, by the way, I think that you live your life for the last 3 minutes of your life, right before you die. Everything, all the screens go away, all the pretense goes away.
Yeah.
You are not an actor. You're not a producer. You're not a director. You know, your lungs start to go. Your heart starts fibrillating. Mm. Your pulse becomes agitated. Things start fading out. And then in 3 minutes, you see yourself exactly for who you are and exactly for what you've done. Mm. If you've been in the deathbed of anyone and you've seen someone go, some people go really peacefully, and some people go, and the last look you get is so unforgettable. Mm-hmm. You see complete panic. And no one goes with a clean slate.
Of course not.
We will all have things that we will go, oh my God, if I could only take this back, oh my God, I shouldn't have done. All of us have it.
Yeah.
And then the only consolation is when you go, but I did this for them, whoever them is, and I changed this for them, and whoever them is. And then you breathe a little, and then you go. So these two little things, a lot of these are the books I read as a kid on mythology.
Yeah. I meant to ask you, where is your father's library? Do you have it?
I have part of it. Yeah. I'll show you. I mean, I have the two important parts that were important for me as a kid are here. These were the books about art.
Oh.
This is the encyclopedia. I memorized this as a kid.
Wow.
On fine art.
Wow.
This is it right here.
Yeah. This is it. This collection.
Yeah.
This is where I learned what being a film director was. And it's called Tell Me What My Profession Will Be.
Oh, wow.
So I read all this.
So just based on your interests, it tells you what you can...
Yeah, it says
what field you can
get
into.
Blah, 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 you know?
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah.
a walk and talk because I know you gotta get out of here.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Well, I hope some of this is usable, man. I mean, it was just shooting the shit. I mean, you know that there's, I don't, this is, I think, the first podcast I've ever made. I normally avoid it. I think I'm, you know, it's weird. Other than my Twitter, I'm very shy.
Well, how was it? How was this for you? This is only your second.
This is great, but I'm always, I'm always nervous of, what would be useful.
Location release. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank
you. All good?
All good. Well, let's take some pictures and
set
this guy free.
We've got a little bit of atmosphere
out here. Oh, yeah. Look at this.
Great. You guys want to maybe turn and interact a little bit softer?
Okay. You got it. No.
Bye, guys. Bye, Guillermo. Thank you.
And with that, we conclude season one of Visitations.
We want to thank you for embarking on this journey with us. We've learned so much about the hearts and minds of the incredible artists who dedicate their lives to finding light in the darkness. And our gratitude for their time and generosity is immeasurable.
If there's one theme that's been a constant through this experience, it's that the world is a vast and mighty ecosystem of conflicting forces, some born of love and others born of fear. Art is the thing that can help us to make sense of all that chaos, to process those fears and face our demons, then walk out the other side comforted by the knowledge that we are not alone.
So to all the dreamers out there for whom art is the lifeline that it is to us, and to the incredible artists who shared their own loves and fears on this show, keep on dreaming and keep on creating, because the world needs what you have to give, and so do we. This has been Visitations.
With Elijah Wood.
And Daniel Noah.
Goodbye.
For now. Created by Spectrevision. Hosted by Daniel Noah and myself, Elijah Wood. Executive producers, Daniel Noah, Josh C. Waller, Lisa Whalen, and me. Produced by Elisa Yeris. On-set producer and post-supervisor was Lauren Magura. Edited and mixed by Graham Resnick. Production sound provided by Brian Curley. Our PA is Rob DeRocha. Photographer, Tema Hankin. Original artwork by Jay Shaw. For Shudder, Owen Shiflett and Nicholas Lazo. And our music was composed by Bad Bad Not Good.